You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. On the America Out Loud Network, I'm your host, Randy Sutton. On this program, we talk about all things law enforcement, and then we go to a great guest, and there is so much to talk about. The first thing, okay, get your blood pressure medication out, because I'm going to tell you something that's going to raise it. I am so sick of the American media and the way they treat law enforcement. This article is almost, it's difficult to believe, of the levels that the media stoops when it comes down to the treatment of the American law enforcement officer. At the end of this program, you know, I always do end of watch, which at which time we tell about the deaths of law enforcement officers, line of duty deaths. Well, at the end of this program, you're going to hear a name read. And what has happened as a result of his death is absolutely sickening. Milwaukee police officer Matthew Rittner was murdered in the line of duty earlier this week. He was shot to death. He was serving a search warrant on a doper. The doper opened fire with an AK-47 through the door. It hit this brave officer in the chest and killed him. He was not only was he a police officer for 17 years serving the community, but he was also a Marine Corps veteran, a life of service. And when he got killed in the line of duty, a Milwaukee news station, a local ABC affiliate, came out with a story just 28 hours after he was killed. The title of the story, the title of the article posted on the website and Facebook page was, quote, "Fallen officer named in federal civil rights lawsuit filed after carjacker's violent arrest." Instead of talking about what this officer had done in his career, instead of talking about the fact that he was murdered, they maligned his name. And guess what? That suit had already been dismissed. They'd already determined that he did nothing wrong. But they wanted some dirt. They wanted to come up with something negative. How unconscionable is this? What kind of human beings are in this type of journalism, and how can they live with themselves? Well, there was a tremendous backlash. I'm gonna read some of the press release from the Milwaukee Police Department, and I think it's important to read this because at least the Milwaukee Police Department had the guts to fight back. This is a press release dated Friday, February 8th, from the Milwaukee Police Department. 28 hours after Milwaukee Police Officer Matthew Rittner was tragically killed in the line of duty, WISN 12 posted an article on its website titled "Fallen Officer Named in Federal Rights Lawsuit Filed After Carjacker's Violent Arrest." The Milwaukee Police Department finds this article to be tasteless, classless, and insulting to the family of Officer Rittner, the entire MPD, and all those who mourn his loss. Out of respect to Officer Rittner's family members and loved ones, the Milwaukee Police Department requested to have this article removed from WISN 12's website as soon as it was brought to our attention. MPD was advised the article would be and was removed. It should be noted that in our efforts to build trust and transparency, the Milwaukee Police Department has no interest in discouraging accurate reporting, whether positive or negative, toward the MPD image. However, this attack has no academic value and was created solely to stir up controversy where none exists. It went on to say, "Officer Matthew Rittner is a hero. He dedicated his life to serving the United States and the Milwaukee Police Department. He was killed as he was protecting and serving the people of our city while conducting a search warrant against an individual who was illegally selling guns and drugs. What is factually correct, that Officer Rittner responded to the August 2017 vehicle pursuit with several MPD officers and other law enforcement agencies. His role was thoroughly investigated by the Internal Affairs Division, and he was cleared of any wrongdoing. Furthermore, several hours of body-worn camera video, along with squad video, were reviewed pertaining to that incident, and the officer responsible for the violent attack was criminally charged and no longer a member of our agency. Matthew Rittner was one of the first officers to assist. So, this officer, Matthew Rittner, did absolutely nothing wrong. And even if he had, even if he was named in a lawsuit, who gives a good goddamn? He was a hero. He gave his life in the line of duty. And he did nothing wrong. This is just another... This is... When I talk about the war on cops, this is part of it. That this type of malignant behavior by the media simply to try and create division and insult law enforcement. Well, WISN, Minneapolis, it's a good thing you can't see the gesture I'm making right now, but I bet you can figure it out. Now, let's go on to some other insanity. The Baltimore Police Union, who is it pretty much the only voice of sanity that comes out of anything in Baltimore when it comes down to policing, has finally come out and said, Baltimore Police Union says, quote, there's no existing crime plan. Patrol only responding to the worst 9/11 calls. You know, this, the demise of law enforcement in Baltimore can be laid at the feet of the previous mayor and police commissioner. Batts was the police commissioner name. I don't even remember what the mayor's name was, an idiot. But you know what? It's not getting any better. It's been years now since the insanity of the arrest of the Baltimore police officers and the riots that were allowed to take place. And the demoralization of that agency began a long time ago. And every time they put a new leader in, it's because it's a political appointee. And every single time they fail. They just got a new one. I wish him luck. He came from some other agency. I really do wish him luck. But one thing is for sure. If the city of Baltimore doesn't start paying and appreciating their law enforcement, then you are going to continue to see the decline. You're going to continue to see the public safety erode even worse than it is. And that's almost hard to imagine. Let me read just a little bit. The union that represents the Baltimore Police Department's rank and file officer said the agency has, quote, no existing crime plan. And patrol shifts are so understaffed and officers so overwhelmed by the volume of 9/11 calls that they are instructed on a nightly basis to respond only to the most violent and pressing ones. As a result, citizens who call 911 in Baltimore may not see a police officer for hours, if at all, when they call with a non-priority incident anytime between 6 p.m. and 2 a.m. each night. It's unbelievable. And yet, instead of addressing this head on and admitting to it, that once again, the political machine in Baltimore and the new police commissioner are playing fast and loose with the facts. They're trying to tell the public, oh, it's not all that bad. It's not that bad. We're a little bit understaffed. Well, you know what? It's a lie. You can bet that the truth is coming out of the rank and file, the cops who are actually on the street. And the fact that they're paying their cops so poorly, that their patrol corps don't function, this is from the union. Patrol cars do not function. Our facilities citywide are dangerously filthy to a point where they would not be acceptable in the Baltimore City jail. Current technology is a complete failure. There is no existing crime plan. There are conflicting messages how to combat crime. There are failed policies, and just as importantly, there is an inability to treat officers with the professionalism and respect they deserve. Now, one thing is for sure. The crime rate in Baltimore is insane. The violent crime rate, the murder rate. And in reality, until there is a concerted effort on the part of the government, and I say the government is the city government, to actually give the resources to the police and the leadership, then this will continue. And no amount of media lies is going to change it. I don't know what's going to happen with the city of Baltimore, but one thing is for sure, it's time for a change. Now, there's more and more stuff going on that makes you shake your head. The mayor of LAPD, Garcetti. Now, this guy is proving to be a spineless political animal who cares nothing about the truth or about public safety. The mayor has ordered the LAPD to scale back vehicle stops amid concerns over black drivers being targeted. Okay, so here's what happened. How did this nonsense come to pass? The local newspaper who is consistently belittling and doing its very best to malign the LAPD came out with an article. Now, let me give you just a little bit of background. The Metro Unit of Metro Division of the LAPD is used to combat high crime concentrations. They take this highly motivated police division, and when there are crime mapping situations where they can concentrate their forces and do a lot of proactive policing, they are very effective at deterring crime. So that's what's happened. They put their Metro Division into the highest crime areas, who, by the way, are predominantly black and Hispanic. And these officers are stopping people for all kinds of traffic offenses in an effort to do proactive policing. That is a tool that cops use. You make the car stop for a taillight out or for not using a turn signal. It's not a major issue, but you use that as a methodology of determining who's in the area, determining if there are any people that are wanted, determining if the cars are stolen. And that's what they use. It's a valid, not only valid, but it is the bread and butter of good policing. Well, because they're working in a predominantly black and Hispanic area, they're stopping more blacks and Hispanics. And now the newspaper prints this ridiculous supposition that, okay, the LAPD is targeting blacks and Hispanics. And what does Garcetti do? Instead of explaining, or even, I don't even know if he knows the truth, if he's so stupid that he didn't even get the facts, or he doesn't care about the facts. All he cares is about politics and the politically correct response in his dimwit mind. Tell the police to stop making car stops. This guy's a moron. And this is how he is dealing with the crime rate in certain areas of LAPD is through the roof. Well, of course, who's going to do anything about it? Well, the cops. Well, now you tell the cops, oh, you can't stop cars. I've never heard such insanity in my life. This is allegedly coming from, or this is coming from an allegedly intelligent human being. But I guess when politics is at play, then common sense, you may as well just toss it out the window because it doesn't mean anything. And this guy is a complete and utter spineless political creature. Couldn't care less about the people. I couldn't care less about the cops. And I wish I had lots more time to talk, but we're going to have to take a walk into the interview room where my guest is waiting. But thank you for listening to My View from the Blue. I want to tell you about a really interesting company that has a nationwide security presence. It's called offdutypoliceofficers.com. It's actually law enforcement specialists, but you can check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. They have a very unique approach to providing security to commercial establishments, residential, any security need that you might have, because they use actual sworn officers. So if you are a police officer or deputy in this country, and you want to work extra jobs, as most do, usually you go through your department. This company, offdutypoliceofficers.com, is their website, law enforcement specialists, actually makes arrangements so that you can work those off-duty jobs, and they work in concert with your agency. It's a great opportunity, and also they are they have a great presence in almost every state in the union. So, law enforcement specialists, if you are a law enforcement officer and you want to work extra jobs, contact them, offdutypoliceofficers.com. If you have a security need, if you are a commercial establishment, if you are a construction company and need traffic jobs, contact them. They have the personnel. They are trained. They are law enforcement officers, and they have all the abilities to provide all of your security needs. And they are a great company. They're based out of Arizona, but they're all over the country. OffDutyPoliceOfficers.com, and it's law enforcement specialists. You can also contact them by phone, 888-572-2442. It's 888-572-2442. If you're a law enforcement officer, you know that wearing body armor, besides being uncomfortable, sometimes can get a little odoriferous, if you will. Wearing that gets sweaty, gets hot. It's difficult sometimes to find the right deodorizer that works, that is natural, that will take care of business. And there's a great product on the market, and it's a Rest My Vest spray. And it's military police grade odor eliminating spray. Now, you don't have to just use it on vests. It's good for all kinds of clothing items. Arrest My Vest spray. Now, where do you get it? StinkyVest.com. Of course, StinkyVest.com. And they've got this great product. I highly suggest it. It's not expensive. It works really well. And it what it does is it eliminates odors through absorbing molecules, odor-absorbing molecule. Doesn't use harmful chemicals, and it's great for pets. It's great for all your clothing items. So check it out. StinkyVest.com. Arrest My Vest Spray. Check it out. StinkyVest.com.
The Out Loud Perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a very special friend of mine. His name is Ron Corey. Ron and I have known each other for many, many years, but that's not why he is on this program. He's on this program because he has written a book called Tenacity. And his relationship with the corruption that took place in Las Vegas while he was an entrepreneur doing business here is a fascinating story. And it has to do with governmental corruption and law enforcement corruption. And that is what the nexus is for bringing Ron onto this program. Ron, thanks so much for joining me on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Well, Randy, thank you so much for having me today.
You know, let's go into your background, first of all. You began your adult life in the United States Marine Corps, and you served a number of years there, and then you came to Las Vegas. When you came to Las Vegas, you began your entrepreneurial career, and your background is absolutely fascinating. Let's start right there. You were stationed in California with the Marines, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I enlisted in the Marine Corps when I was 19 in 1972 and served active duty time until my discharge from active duty, wherein I moved to Las Vegas and went to work as a casino dealer.
That's an interesting career choice right there. Now, you got to Las Vegas in a time when the history of Las Vegas was still, let's say, colorful.
It was a very small town with just over 100,000 people living here, unlike the 2 million today. And it was very colorful, to say the least.
Okay. So you began your career in Las Vegas as a dealer. And then let's work through that for just a few minutes and get to the point where you started a number of businesses. And let's go through a few of them to what led to the incident that you wrote this amazing book, Tenacity, about.
Okay. Well, in 1974, I went to work as a casino dealer and became a realtor in 1976. I was dealing at the time at the Tropicana Hotel. It was a great job. And I wanted to get in business for myself, which culminated in 1979 with the purchase of a tavern called the Suburban Lounge. And I want to clarify something. My entrepreneurial experience wasn't limited to Las Vegas. There are multiple outlying municipalities that surround Las Vegas. And the corruption that my book describes is from one of those outlying municipalities, not Las Vegas proper. And in my book, I have fictionalized the name of the outlying city, and I've aptly named it Opportunity, Nevada. And some of the corruption that I've exposed, based on attorney's advice, I have fictionalized the names of some of these city attorneys, city council members, and police detectives. And quite a few people have gotten quite a kick out of reading the book and figuring out exactly who I'm talking about and where I'm talking about. And that kind of adds a little bit to the intrigue, while 100% of the content of the story I describe is actual and based on my true life experience. The bottom line of the corruptness that occurred is related to a councilman that was a competitor of mine in private business. And rather than abstain from participating, he worked hard to get the projects my business partner and I applied for denied. And so much so to the point that when we were close to prevailing in a court action, they trumped up some criminal charges against me to do away with me as a competitor of his.
Before we get into that, the meat of that, I want my listenership to get to know you a little bit. And so you began your entrepreneurship as your first business when you moved here was a bar. And then for my listeners, I want my listeners to know that Vegas is unlike anywhere else. When you open a bar here, you don't make your money from alcohol. You make your money from the gaming, because each bar has gaming poker machines in it. So that was really the crux of your business, was it not?
Well, you know what's interesting, and the book goes into some detail, because it not only describes city and police corruption, it also is a bit of an entrepreneurial how-to book, and it describes my purchasing or starting 20 businesses. And with the first bar that you described, when I first got into the bar business, there were no video poker machines. The bars really made money selling drink and food, and only a couple of years later does my book describe how video poker and interactive gaming actually became a reality in town and shifted the trends of bars only making money from drinks to actually 80 to 90% of the revenue is from gaming, and shifted the whole focus on what it meant to be a tavern operator. You were truly a gaming operator after 1985.
You know, so I learned something today. I didn't know that that's when gaming became part of the landscape with bars. So you became basically a small casino owner when this transition took place, and that was really that trajectory that eventually led you to want to create a larger casino in an outlying, since we're not mentioning names, in an outlying community outside of Las Vegas.
That's correct, because that outlying municipality did not have the requirements of unlimited gaming as existed in Las Vegas, which required a full hotel. So by purchasing property just outside of town, you could actually have unlimited gaming without building a hotel, and that's why we purchased that property. And it's what brought us into this municipality, not knowing that this particular council member was going to be a competitor of ours and try to limit competition by using the power of his small town police department and city council office to limit that competition. Now, before we got into that project, as you asked about some growth, the book describes how we purchased one bar in 1979. And by we, just let me digress a moment. A buddy I met in Marines moved to Vegas with me as we got discharged at the same time. His name is Dan Hughes. And we were partners in the Marine Corps and became business partners in Vegas, wherein we went from owning that first tavern into a second tavern in Las Vegas. We built a printing company, a glass and mirror supply company, and opened a limousine service in town before we purchased this property in the adjacent city that enabled us to go into unlimited gaming, or so we thought, until we encountered this particular councilman.
So I think that what the listeners need to understand is the uniqueness of this situation. So you and your partner, you'd been a successful business people in Las Vegas for a number of years, and then you realizing that you could take advantage of the unrestricted gaming license, which of course would allow you to create a small casino by not having a hotel. That's the difference, because in Vegas, you had to have a hotel in order to have a larger gaming operation. By going and creating...
more than 15 clubs.
Understood. Okay. So you began to create the plans. I can't imagine how much money it must have cost you just to even begin the process of creating your own, you know, small casino operation.
Yeah, for a couple of guys that got out of the Marine Corps with $1,000 total between us, we got very lucky to parlay a couple of investments into the ability to buy this piece of land, to build a $1.3 million property on it, and fully expect to just sail through the licensing procedure as previous gaming licensees and merely operate a quality food, beverage, and gaming facility, only to encounter this amazing level of corruption. Imagine if a competitor controls the city government you're in and they can falsely charge you with five felonies and force you to fight a defense of these trumped up charges instead of developing your property, how it distracts you from what you're truly hoping to accomplish. And what the book describes in great detail is the undercover operation that we engaged in to demonstrate to the courts and the community what the truth was. And I think your listeners are going to really get a kick out of the justifiable payback I mounted against this particular councilman.
All right, let's get into that story a little bit. So you are, considering, my listeners need to know that you're already, at this point, you're already a licensed gaming individual, which is not an easy thing to do. You got to go through an unbelievable background investigation, which goes back literally to your childhood. So you're already licensed, and now you want to take that and create another place for you to ply your business. Let's go into how that happened, and then go into the story of how you were set up to fail by this corruption issue.
Well, from a regulatory basis, even if you're already a gaming licensee licensed in Nevada, when you apply for a new location, they still put you through an investigation. Now, they generally merely update your investigation from the last property you opened to the new one. And you're right, they are more intrusive than the IRS. You fill out a small book in the form of an application. And what happened in my case is, and not just my case, but all cases, they will actually assign two investigators to your application, and they, on your dime, they will send them back to where you lived before. Even in my case, if it was 20 years prior, they will send them back to where you lived previously, and they will talk to neighbors and school teachers and friends to make sure they keep all levels of corruption and mob influence out of gaming. It's very thorough, and it's for a good purpose. But that's what we had to do to open a non-restricted gaming location.
So you begin the process of making your application, thinking that you're going to just get through. But what happened?
Well, the city council essentially indicates to me informally that they're okay with the application. And then when we appear at the hearing, this councilman within whose ward we were located takes the lead and tells the rest of the council that the entire community is against it. He's against it. They vote to deny it. And we are going to just take it to court for judicial review of a capricious and arbitrary denial. In light of the multiple other locations they had previously approved, we had every reason to believe we would be granted the license by the court. However, before it got there, they trumped up those criminal charges against me. So I couldn't even go forward with the gaming application because I had to clear my name in the charges that were trumped up.
Well, that's where we need to go now. When you say felony charges, explain to the listeners what happened and how they came to be.
Well, I'm going to be purposefully vague because if I tell the whole story, Randy, nobody's going to need to buy the book.
Okay. All right. I understand what you're saying.
I'll try to give you the broad strokes. So these charges get filed, and it has to do with a waiter that we caught stealing who, in my opinion, they coerced into accusing his accuser, even though we had the proof that the waiter had stolen thousands of dollars from us in food and beverage receipts. They put him up to claiming that the confession he signed when we caught him stealing was coerced by force. And little things that a business owner would do, thinking he was just taking care of business, like, for example, he signed over the current paycheck to me as partial payment for the theft that he confessed to. Well, they decided to call that extortion and coercion. And because I have a CCW, they added with use of a deadly weapon, which would double the potential prison time. He claims we wouldn't let him leave the office when we confronted him with the theft, so they charged me with kidnapping. And when they were done with the charges, there were six charges against me. Five of them were felony charges. They charged me and my managers, and we decided that a well-intentioned jury could think where there's smoke, there's fire. And if a police department filed this many charges against these four individuals, me and my three managers, they must have done something, even though we don't quite believe what's being claimed because the physical evidence didn't support it. And they could have just found us guilty of one minor misdemeanor, which they wouldn't have realized. The impact of that is I would lose my gaming license and my accuser would follow up with a civil suit that would cost me half my net worth. So we couldn't even risk that occurred. And rather than wait and hope for the best, my attorney team and I decided to mount a defense, starting with hiring an investigator, staging an undercover operation 40 miles out of town, where this accuser of mine would appear to just randomly run into a girl that he was very interested in, that was working for me. And the undercover operation with my investigator befriending him and monitoring his every action, something that would be in existence for over 12 months, would work towards clearing my name, because this kid felt like he had just met his new best friend and was starting to disclose a great many things to him, which get revealed in the book Tenacity.
And this is one of the issues that is so, to me, degrading to about law, about this situation, is the introduction of a law enforcement officer who later wound up becoming a very high-ranking police officer, who was the tool of this administration, this city councilman, and utilize his powers in a manner that really brings discredit upon all law enforcement. And for my listeners, I want you to know that I watched this happen, and I was ashamed of what I was seeing. But let's go into that just a little bit of how this police detective, some of the things that he did would today land him in prison.
Well, yeah. Now, bear in mind, this is an outlying city that had its own small city council, its own police department, its own city attorney, and a residency in the tens of thousands. So many people joke and call it Hooterville and Mayberry. But in reality, there's a great deal of power in a position like that the system could actually ramrod someone into prison for the rest of their lives. And your specific question regarding this detective who was doing the dirty work for this city councilman, we actually proved him to be a liar on the stand in the preliminary hearing. But what was really interesting, as your readers, your listeners will read in the story, is at one point, my investigator is hanging out with my accuser on a daily basis, and the accuser is telling him how this police detective is advising him on how best to get me, even in defiance of the law and the police procedures manual that he's sworn to uphold. In one case, my investigator finds that there's a certified warrant for my accuser out of Sacramento, California, and has that warrant delivered to the detective, at which time my attorney says, "Ron, these bogus charges are going to go away now that we know this kid is wanted in Sacramento. They will arrest him and extradite him." Now, unbeknownst to the other side, this accuser of mine is friends with my investigator. So when he calls him to tell him what happened that day, he says, "You're not going to believe this. The detective called me in and Corey people found a warrant for me for auto theft in Sacramento. So I thought I was headed to prison." Instead, the detective says, "With this hanging over your head, you're not going to make a good witness against Corey. So I've called the chief in the department that arrested you and told him that we're going after a much bigger fish, and I've gotten your charges dismissed. You just go in there, pay a fine, you'll walk right back out, and you'll be a good witness against these guys at Winner's Casino." And that's just one example of the kind of things we had to combat with this dishonest detective on our tails.
You spent untold amounts of your personal money in order to combat these charges. Not only you, but you also had your employees that were being poured down the drain with you. I can't imagine the stress that you were under during. I mean, how long did this entire situation take place to resolve?
Well, from the time we bought the property until the time we ultimately prevailed in court against the city was 10 years. As far as the criminal charges against me, to defeat them took 2 years. And I don't want people listening to your show to think I've spoiled the ending for them, because they will be absolutely intrigued at the twists and turns this entire undercover operation took and how we fought from many fronts the various ways this city came at us. Not only then, but even 15 years later, when they maintained a vendetta against me and tried again with the same detective who told someone who committed a serious crime that if he would lie and point the finger at me as the person who sent him on that crime, he could get full immunity and they would come after me and finally get me. That segment of my life has its own chapter in the book. And what you spoke about, yes, my three managers were also stuck in this fight with me. And my partner, Dan Hughes, was just an absolutely great and loyal friend, agreed that we would fund the defense of all three managers as well as myself and take this on as a unified front and deal proper retribution to all the people involved in this that were coming after me.
I've read this book, and I got to tell you, even though I was an observer for some of this, I found that this book was not only a tremendous read, but entertaining as hell as well. Now, when it was published, it's in print, of course. It's also in available in electronic form, but you also had an incredible narration done for those that like books on tape. How did that happen?
Yeah, audio. Okay, it's the audiobook version. They no longer do it on discs or tapes, but they can download a streaming audio to their cell phone or computer. And the way that developed is I hired a book consultant to help advise me, as I had never written a book before. I knew I had a great story to tell, but to make it a book, I needed some good advice. So this consultant told me that 25% of all books sold today are only sold in audio form. That's 25% of the market. They only buy audio books. Well, when I learned that the percentage was that high, I decided that I wanted to make my audiobook a kick-ass book. So I thought, I'm going to hire a celebrity to read it. And I thought about different celebrity voices that might be recognizable and add some professionalism and legitimacy to a first-time author. The first voice I went after was Gene Hackman. He's in his 80s. He retired from movie making, but I thought he might be interested in reading a book and making some extra money. Well, my public relations manager located Mr. Hackman's publicist, who said that Mr. Hackman, while honored with the request, has 100% retired and wasn't working anymore. But she is also the agent of a well-known A-list actor named Michael Madsen. Many people I've encountered don't know the name, but as soon as they Google him, they know instantly who he is. He's been in such movies as Donnie Brasco, Reservoir Dogs, Kill Bill, and Free Willy. He's been in over 290 movies. Well, I struck a deal with Mike. He flew to town and spent a week in a recording studio, and my book is available in audiobook form on Amazon, read solely by Michael Madsen.
And I got to tell you, he has a voice that is very, very unique. And what an incredible opportunity for you to have worked basically with him to create a product that is not only entertaining, but it is it's enthralling. So where can people get the book now?
They go to Amazon. They could search for a book, Tenacity by Ron Khoury, spelled C-O-U-R-Y, and it's available in four forms: paperback, hardcover, Kindle, ebook, or Audible. And they can purchase it on Amazon. They can also find a quick link to my book by going to my book's website, ronkhoryauthor.com. And they can hit a quick link to get to the book or the audiobook.
And they can also read a little bit more about you on your website, ronkhoryauthor.com.
Yes, there's a very nice summary about the book, myself. There's a photo gallery on the website. And even though I've disclosed a couple of things, obviously, if I'm talking to you, I'm not in prison. So people can conclude, especially since your listeners are law enforcement based, that the city did not get me. But trust me when I say, even though you know how it ended, you would truly love to see how we got here.
I can attest to that. First of all, for my listeners, it is a great book. I have read it. I'm familiar with the story itself, of course, and maybe that makes me a little prejudiced. But I can tell you this, that reading Tenacity, understanding who Ron Khoury truly is, Ron is an American hero. And he took a situation that would have destroyed 99.9 of us, and he did not let this corruption destroy his life. Instead, he became the warrior that he truly is, and he turned a system upside down. Ron, thank you so much for taking the time to be on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I enjoy talking about your book, Tenacity, and I think that my listeners will enjoy reading it.
Thank you, Randy. I really appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
I want to take a moment and tell you about the books that I have written and are available on Amazon.com. My first three books were all law enforcement related, and they were stories. My first was True Blue, police stories by those who have lived them, followed by A Cop's Life, and then the third, True Blue to Protect and Serve. My latest book came out just in September. It's called The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And this was an amazing book for me to put together. They are the stories of people throughout this country, people who have done amazing things with their lives, about who their personal heroes were and how they inspired them. This is a book that I hope will touch the lives of people all over this country. If you get a chance, check it out, Amazon.com. It is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. I have a very special announcement to make. You have heard me make a few references over the last few weeks, and if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter, you might have noticed that these notices are becoming a little more frequent. I'm going to tell you about the Wounded Blue, the assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. I've been working on this for more than 2 years. This is an organization that I wish didn't need to exist. But the fact is that when a police officer or law enforcement officer gets injured or disabled in the line of duty, very often they are abandoned and alone by their police agencies, by the people that they serve with, and by the communities. It's heartbreaking. We are creating this organization, which is going to launch officially during Police Week, May of this year. But right now, there's something very special I'm going to ask you to do. And that's going to go to look at the film trailer that is now on YouTube. We've created a feature film called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. We're going to be launching this film soon as well. But I would love for you to check out the trailer. So if you go to YouTube and then put in The Wounded Blue, you'll see the trailer. If you can donate, please do. Go to www.thewoundedblue.org. You can see what we're going to be offering, or you can see how we're going to be changing and protecting the lives of our injured and disabled law enforcement officers. I'm going to need your help. Go to thewoundedblue.org. And check out the trailer on YouTube at The Wounded Blue. You'll be hearing much more about this incredible organization as time goes by.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
On Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, at the end of the show, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. Unfortunately, there are always names to read. And today I have two more law enforcement officers who have given their lives. The first is Officer Matthew Rittner of the Milwaukee Police Department in Wisconsin. Police Officer Matthew Rittner was shot and killed as he executed a narcotics and firearms-related search warrant at home in the 2900 block of South 12th Street near West Dakota Street. As the tactical enforcement unit attempted to breach the apartment door, the suspect opened fire with an AK-47, shooting through the door and striking Officer Rittner in the chest. Officer Rittner was transported to the hospital where he died from his injuries. The subject who shot him was taken into custody at the scene. He was charged with first-degree intentional homicide and numerous other narcotics and weapons charges. Officer Rittner was a United States Marine Corps veteran of the War on Terror. He has served with the Milwaukee Police Department for 17 years. He survived by his wife and child. Milwaukee Police Officer Matthew Rittner, Milwaukee Police Department, End of Watch, Wednesday, February 6th, 2019. The second law enforcement officer to die in the line of duty this week, Detective Brian Simonson of the New York City Police Department. Detective Brian Simonson was shot and killed while responding to a robbery at a cell phone store at the intersection of Atlantic and 120th Street in the Richmond Hill section of the city. Detective Simonson and his sergeant were canvassing on an unrelated case when they heard a call for a robbery in progress. They responded to the store, where they encountered a subject and attempted to apprehend him. As patrol officers responded to the scene, both detectives, who were in plain clothes, were struck by friendly fire as the suspect pointed what was later determined to be a fake gun at responding officers. Detective Simonson succumbed to his wounds. His sergeant was transported to the local hospital with injuries. The suspect was also shot and wounded. Detective Simonson served with the New York City Police Department for 19 years, was assigned to the 102nd Precinct Detective Squad. Detective Brian Simonson, New York City Police Department, end of watch, Tuesday, February 12th, 2019. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for taking the time to join me on the Voice of American Law Enforcement, Blue Lives Radio. I hope that you enjoyed today's broadcast, and there is much more to come as we enter 2019. If you would, I would really love for you to visit thewoundedblue.org. That's thewoundedblue.org. It's the new support and assistance organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. You're going to be hearing a lot about this because this is one of the most important organizations that I've ever been involved with, and it is going to touch the lives of hundreds of thousands of law enforcement families in this country. If you are in need of talking to someone, if you are a law enforcement professional and you are troubled by post-traumatic stress, you have been injured in the line of duty and are having issues dealing with it, contact us at this organization, thewoundedblue.org. Also, check out my books, amazon.com. You'll see them all. Thanks again for joining me on Blue Lives Radio, the Voice of American Law Enforcement. We'll see you next week.